Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud, and I think I forgot a couple of the obligatories because I made my big announcement yesterday that if you want to see my name as the constitutional president in 2028, you need to be contacting me so you can run as an elector for me, and that way you can actually get on the ballots and so forth, because right now the Republican and Democratic Party have full control over access to politics and your politicians. And so that is all unconstitutional. We need to challenge that. And I'm hoping that we can get these third parties, like the Libertarians, the Constitution Party, all of these third parties, to actually to challenge this and reintroduce the Electoral College so that the people get to actually choose their elector. We're not supposed to have a popular vote. And so I think America's ready, because by the time Trump is done, I think America's going to realize that not having a constitutional president and watching this nation be tossed to and fro between these diametrically opposing sides is going to prove that we will not withstand the next couple of terms if we actually make it through this term. Because the last time Trump was in office, the globalists pulled their pandemic, and Trump was played like a fiddle, because he doesn't have people understanding the Constitution, and so he's not. Thank you for joining in. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
Somebody has to say these things. We need to start getting everybody to parrot this narrative that, Trump, I hear people talk to him like he's a savior. There are people that take it to the level of religion. There are people that take it to historic. He's historically the best president ever. And are you kidding me? There's not one, not one thing he's doing, and I hate to say this, he's not doing it constitutionally. He's using the processes as before. He's going to lose, and he's going to shake his head and go, it's all corrupt. He's not doing anything to end corruption in our government. The Constitution actually ends corruption. You cannot be corrupt in the United States government. And technically, you shouldn't be able to be corrupt in any state government. Why? Because we have enumerated constitutions, and they can't make law that is not within that constitution. And I'm seeing states left and right making laws that are not in the U.S. Constitution or in the state constitution because the federal government told them to do it. Our bureaucrats said, you got to do this. And they vote for it. We need a clear purging. As a matter of fact, even in Wyoming, we have what I would call good conservative legislators, good conservative politicians. Maybe not at the county, but anyway, there are good conservatives, but that's not good enough. We deserve constitutional champions. And if you're not going to do it, then who? And if not now, then when? So, anyway, we also invite you to make your appeal to heaven, to wake up good people, to rise to the challenge. This is not a tough challenge, folks. God gave us everything in that Constitution to win. Everything we need is in the Constitution. And therefore, any person in office that violates that, we can get rid of them. And Trump's not doing it. He's using the same old processes of, we're going to use these statute laws, like, going after these governors or mayors or what have you that are going to try to protect them. They're violating federal statutes and taking them into court. No, they're violating the supreme law of the land, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Get rid of them. If you mm-hmm. want to take them to court, if you want to take them to court for the crimes, that's another thing. But bottom line, if we have all the power right there in Section 3, it demands every person must support. When I say support the Constitution, folks, do not think that's a passive support. All they have to do is be elected and sit in their chair, and they're supporting the Constitution. When there are violations to the Constitution, they must take a stand and actually take a swipe and try to arrest every infraction. We've gone through the language of Madison. Madison was very clear. We must oppose every infraction. Oppose it, not just stand there or sit there and watch these people do their evil deeds. That is giving aid and comfort. Those people who are giving aid and comfort, just sitting there, not saying anything, and they're Republicans, then they've got to go, because we need yep. champions on the Constitution. I hate to have this, I hate to have this zero defect mentality, but when it comes to public service and our liberties, folks, you know, anything that goes against our liberty kills us. I mean, we can't allow anything other than constitutional public servants. If not, the danger and the risk is way too high. They're literally putting poison in the air over us. They're poisoning our water. They're poisoning our food. And they're doing all sorts of things economically. They're inflating and making our property worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, they are waging all-out warfare against our lives and our property. What is it going to take? Maybe you'll start having prayer circles. If you can join Woody's Prayer Circle, the Loud and Liberty Prayer Circle, right there on the podcast page. If you have your own, let me know. I'll put it up there. I respond to everybody. Actually, there's one gentleman, I got to say this. There's a gentleman in Utah that reached out and called me and said, hey, text me. My phones don't do texts. And I have a cell phone, but before I actually start sharing my cell phone with anybody, I want to know that I can trust you. I'll do some background checks on you, and then I'll share my cell phone. But, you know, reach out, send me an email. That's the best way. info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. It's right there on the website. Or you can just call and leave a message and leave your email. Or just if you want to have a conversation that you want to talk about something on the air, I'll be happy to do that. Especially if it's one of those topics that we can really have a good, deep conversation. I'd love doing that. Don't I, Tammy? Don't I love to having
yes,
deep
conversations? Yes,
you do. All right. Forgive me for that.
Definite strength viewers. Yes.
So we're looking at the second Reconstruction Act. And where did we leave off? I think we left off with Section 5.
Six.
And we're on Section 6 now. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I think I covered everything. Oh, no. And one other obligatory. Folks, if you want to make a change, you have to start your campaign now. In other words, we need to start running PR campaigns and calling out these bums and start keeping record. If you want to replace your county commissioners, you need to know what they're doing every day, and you need to call them out for all of the things they're doing every day that they shouldn't be doing. And then by the time, in 2 years, when they come up for re-election, because they didn't come up for election this last time, you couldn't challenge them then those county commissioners that are vulnerable in 2 years that you can oppose and replace, you'll have all that you need. Go hit them with petitions. Let them tell you they don't care about your First Amendment petitions. Because all that's going to do is it should infuriate you and every citizen in that county. That's how you get rid of them. You have to use a public relations campaign starting now. And by doing this over the next year and a half, because the filing, at least in Wyoming, it's at the end of May. So you're about a year and a half away. You got to start now so that as you go into the spring next year, you'll have this long laundry list of these things, and you'll have it on videotape, too. and you'll have it up on a website, and you're going to basically be able to make all of this available of the things that this county commissioner has said that they don't care about the Constitution. I'm going to bet you any county commissioner in the state of Wyoming that makes a comment like that will not survive the next election. Am I not right?
I hope not.
Yeah, one would hope not.
But, there's a lot of things that surprise me lately. But
yeah, but I'm just saying, if you're not in Laramie County and you're not in, what's the Casper?
Natrona.
And then County. Teton or over in that area. Then, I mean, most all of the counties, if you start saying things that you don't care about people's First Amendment rights of petitioning and we're not, you know, we don't have to do these things, then let them defend that in the real election run, because you'll have all of the evidence necessary. That's how you do it. Yeah. That's how you do it. You basically give the people the facts. And as a matter of fact, if the county central committees are doing their job, they will actually run constitutional tests, and they'll actually be supporting petitions. And if they're supporting petitions and doing constitutional tests, there's no way that county commission will ever be in office ever again. Anyway, anywho, we were just going to jump into six, and I needed to get through that obligatory about your campaign. So, folks, get going. And Tammy, section six.
Okay, and be it further enacted that all elections in the states mentioned in said act to provide for the more efficient government of the rebel states shall, during the operation of said act, be by ballot, and all officers making the said registration of voters and conducting said elections shall, before entering upon the discharge of their duties, take and subscribe the oath prescribed by the act approved July 2nd, 1862, entitled An Act to Prescribe an Oath of Office, provided that if any person shall knowingly and falsely take and subscribe any oath in this act prescribed, such person, so offending and being thereof duly convicted, shall be subject to the pains, penalties, and disabilities which by law are provided for the punishment of the crime of willful and corrupt perjury.
You know, they love, you know, making titles long, don't they?
Yeah.
But obviously, they are focused on the oath. There's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, they want to emphasize the requirement for the oath. And an act to provide for the more efficient government of the rebel states. Now, I could have thought that, you know, I would have thunk that they might have tried to use a little bit more, you know, rebel states, right? The mm-hmm. former state. How about former states of the Union? I know.
Yeah, so more politically correct.
So actually, when you go and stand in front of a judge, or when you're speaking to somebody, and you refer to your ex-wife or ex-husband as your ex, it has a derogatory connotation. It has this quote-unquote judgmental tone. And so to say my former wife, my former husband, does not come across as judgmental. Mm-hmm. As, you know, it's you're being more objective and allowing the person listening to take an objective view instead of a subjective view, because when you label somebody my ex or the rebel or, you know, something derogatory, in a way, it's almost like label lynching somebody. By yeah. creating a bad connotation, people look at those people as, oh, they're bad. Mm-hmm. That's why everybody today, historians, conservatives all alike, and the progressives all alike, look at the Congress, the Republican Congress that created the 14th Amendment, as the radical Republicans. They're label lynching them. There is yeah. power in those types of words. And if we recognize when people are using those words, they're being divisive. And, I don't want to, give, you know, warm cuddlies with this Congress that's pushing forward. You got to remember that this act only has a threshold of 50% coming out of Congress. They didn't need the two-thirds. So, you know, the bar was much lower. There were probably some people that did not vote for these acts because they just thought that they were repugnant. And the language in them, repugnant. But when you have legislation that is within your power, such as making rules and regulations necessary for governing the territory that the Constitution gives Congress, they only need a 50% to do this. But they're not doing a good job in stating their case by using those types of subjective labels. There you go. How's that? We
agreed.
We deserve better, and we should demand better from ourselves. I mean, I'm just as bad. I know I'm bad, but I know I need to do better. So, anywho, let's try Section 7.
And be it further enacted that all expenses incurred by the several commanding generals, or by virtue of any orders issued or appointments made by them, under or by virtue of this act, shall be paid out of any monies in the treasury not otherwise appropriated.
Okay, so pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Let's do the next section.
Be it further enacted that the convention for each state shall prescribe the fees, salary, and compensation to be paid to all delegates and other officers and agents herein authorized or necessary to carry into effect the purposes of this act not herein otherwise provided for, and shall provide for the levy and collection of such taxes on the property in such state as may be necessary to pay the same.
Now, to me, the elections and those types of things, if the federal government is going to come along and basically say, we want to have an election to find out whether there's enough people that want to have a convention, I don't think that they ought to put that burden. That burden shouldn't be placed on the states, because these are territories, actually not states, and maybe they're not ready. I think that they need to basically create a consensus that you get a representative government and let the representatives who speak for the people, because that's how the states were joining the union, who basically were representing the people. Well, no, we're not ready yet. We're not ready to join the union yet. Now, just remember that the 14th Amendment has already been passed. There's a year passed since the 14th, almost a year to the day. I mean, it's like 3 months away. So 9 months ago, the 14th Amendment has gone out for ratification amongst the northern states. The southern states themselves have the ability to ratify that amendment and join the union. That's a quick process of reattaching or rejoining the union. And so if you don't do that, then you have to kind of go through this process. And so those states that weren't quick, or they're saying, well, we're not going to ratify that, because they're going to basically string these states along until the states actually ratified the Constitution, right? And so when was the ratification going to occur? Well, I can tell you. It was going to occur in June 1867. In other words, in just 3 more months, the 14th Amendment was going to be ratified by a sufficient amount of northern states. And that state that ratified it was Nebraska. So technically it was a western state. But nevertheless, it was being ratified by the three-fourths of the states that were in the Union at the time. I'm just appalled by people trying to twist this any other way, that the southern states were still states. No, come on. They left the Union. They seceded. They picked up. They left Congress. They had no representation in the Union whatsoever. They dissolved their membership. And they went back to their sovereign state, and they reorganized themselves into a confederation and adjoined into a new union. Okay, so they're out. they're out, and they're out fairly. And they're out actually because the northern states were doing bad. So they were getting the federal government to do bad things. So again, these states had one or two paths into the Union. Either, and this is when I read anybody that uses under duress, I have a problem with that, because how is somebody really under duress when they obtain a financial advantage? In other words, were they coerced?
Right.
Or were they under duress? Because those two words do not mean the same thing. Coerced means we incentivized you to actually do this. Or actually, coerce is almost like using hard leverage, where you feel like you... That may be a duress. So that maybe that's not... We created a huge benefit for them and motivation for them to come back into the Union. Either that or they pay their financial debt to Britain, period. That's what Section 4 of the 14th Amendment did. And I'm amazed when people read the 14th Amendment. They, oh, this is trash. This is terrible. This is an evil amendment. No, it wasn't. Absolutely not. It set the stage, forced Britain to do their underhanded things that they've been doing for years and years, and it forced them to up their ante and really throw all of their money into the fan to basically undermine us. The thing that they knew going in that all of these things were all illegitimate. Everything they did had no legitimacy. But they got everybody to go along. They created this world of corruption in this sphere of politics of those who knew. Those who didn't know were just told, well, you got to go along with this. And don't worry. It's okay. Just go along. And, and that's what they did. And there were people that just went along because they knew not to challenge. They had corrupted the right people and enough of them to get away with these sequential processes that have put us in this position today, from the corporations and all of this unconstitutional government. They've been doing the same old things for a long time. I mean, come on. Satan's been at this for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So don't be surprised.
Yep.
All right. So do we have one more?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Section 9, and be it further enacted that the word article in the sixth section of the act to which this is supplementary shall be construed to mean section.
There you go. Okay. Now, one of the things that I have ran into that there's a patriot groups that look at the use of articles versus the uses of amendments were, contravening or actually wrong. I mean, they're supposed to be using articles. Now, technically, when I look at the Constitution, we have Article 1 through Article 7. Then the amendments that followed was Article 1 through 12, because the Bill of Rights went out as amendments and they were literally articles. Now, if you're going to adjoin the Bill of Rights to the Constitution as articles, then the Bill of Rights would have been Article 8, with Section 1 being the First Amendment, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 12, if all 12 amendments would have been passed. And that if you were going to keep the term article and maintain fidelity to the numerical sequence. You don't start over with Article 1. I hope this is making sense. You don't go to Article 1, and then when somebody says, well, in Article 1 of the Constitution, they're thinking you're talking about legislative, not the First Amendment. And so you either call them amendments, or you have to go to a sequential in articles, and that just doesn't make sense. But anyway, as a matter of fact, we can talk about this when I come right back after this. Folks, we'll be right back talking about articles. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so this is GR's view of the Constitution as we look at Article 1 to Article 7. I see this as divine. You know, you got to remember, folks, that there were 13 articles, 13 in the Articles of Confederation. And by happenchance, the framers took the entire government and everything in the Articles of Confederation, and they framed that into six articles. And in the seventh, they rested the power upon the states. That almost seems divine. And as a matter of fact, I see his DNA in the design. In other words, this government was created in six articles, like the world was created in 6 days. And he rested in, as a symbol of sanctifying the world for us. And as a matter of fact, when I look at the resting of the authority upon the states, that in a way is sanctifying this formed government, sanctifying it for the states. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And does that, I mean, what do you think? I mean, am I off on this? Because I see his DNA in this stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's good you agree with me because I'm not in the mood for an argument right now. All right.
Now, I think you're always in the mood for that.
No, I just like discussing things. Talk to my kids. I'm sorry. I'm laughing too hard, but I know my children used to, they would actually tell me, hey, can you just spank me instead of lecturing?
Right.
Okay. So have pity for my children. We're on the third Reconstruction Act now, and this was actually sent out July 19th. Now, at this point, the 14th Amendment has been ratified. So any state that's joining the Union no longer is required to ratify the 14th Amendment. It is implied. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I get this feeling that some people in Congress still didn't get that, or they still wanted to move forward with these acts because some of the states we're wanting to drag along. Now, keep in mind, there is an incentive for the federal government to bring states into the Union. And what is that incentive?
Money.
Money, absolutely. Taxation. The federal government cannot tax a territory. They can't levy and put apportionments on a territory. The taxation, the direct tax, which is apportioned to each of the states, would go to the state. Well, until it's a state, that apportionment can't be applied. Until representation is solidified in Congress and the apportionment and representation has been done, then they basically can lay the apportionment tax or the direct tax upon the states. Now, just to be clear here, so the federal government had the incentive in trying to bring them in. And you would think that, you know, it's one thing to placate evil. You know, you should never do that. But it's, you know, I think the 14th Amendment incentivized those states in joining the Union. And I see that at this point in time, the federal government probably should have, you know, created better incentives. But again, some of the things that they were doing, I think was not, let me just say this. I believe that when the Constitution is being amended, and because the higher bar of 2/3, I believe in so doing, it naturally presents more of a divine nature, because I believe that the struggle that people have to get a good majority of the people, not just a simple majority, but a obvious major majority, 66%, right? 2/3, 66%. That's not 60% like what the Senate has, but 66%, almost 70%. And you're going, wow. I mean, I think that there's a lot more prayer and a lot more effort in getting there and doing that and doing it right. Where acts, you know, we only need this many. We already got this, so let's just pound this out and let's hurt them now. And so those types of things are very commonly done in democracies, but getting to a supermajority with 2/3 or 3/4, to me, that's a different level. And so that's one of the reasons why when I look at, and I've done this, I've examined the 14th Amendment and the language and how it evolved. It evolved in wanting to punish the states. They literally wanted to create an amendment that would have punished the rebel states, to actually creating a law that made it moved from punishing the rebel states and those public servants that, you know, rebelled, from that to ending up basically setting a standard moving forward that anybody who violated their oath of office is instantly ineligible to be in office and is to be removed and banned for life. That, to me, was a godly evolution of Section 3. When I look at the evolution of each of these, Section 1, 2, 3, and 4, I just see godly evolutions of the language and improving and solidifying and taking care of real problems that were unconstitutional, like the Dred Scott case, where Taney basically said blacks cannot be citizens. He didn't have the power to say that. And there's no standard there's nothing in the Constitution that keeps that from saying that, or it keeps a person from being a citizen. Right? There's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to be a certain race or you can't be this race to be a citizen. So the fact that Taney did that, and my problem with, and I've already said this on the air, folks, that when Trump, you know, basically talked about the Taney Court making that shameful decision, they called it shameful. No, it was unconstitutional. He had no power to legislate. He had no power to redefine. We need to start calling things for what it is. So anyway, that again, that's why I'm telling you, you have an opportunity to actually have a constitutional president in 2028. And I'm that guy. I'm willing to be your president, but you have to elect electors. You have to become an elector to get me. In other words, you need to start working in changing your state and getting back into constitutional compliance. There you go. I know there's a few people, when they hear this, they're going to cringe. Anyway. All right. So let's dive into this third Reconstruction Act. I'm waiting with bated breath to find what ills might we find here. So go ahead.
Great. An act supplementary to an act entitled An Act to Provide for the More Efficient Government of the Rebel States, passed on the second day of March, 1867, and the act supplementary thereto, passed on the 23rd day of March, 1867, being enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that it is hereby declared to have been the true intent and meaning of the act of the second day of March 1867, entitled An Act to Provide for the More Efficient Government of the Rebel States, and of the act supplementary thereto, passed on the 23rd day of March in the year 1867, that the governments then existing in the rebel states of Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, Texas, and Arkansas were not legal state governments, and that thereafter said governments, if continued, were to be continued subject in all respects to the military commanders of the respective districts and to the paramount authority of Congress.
Okay, so when I look at these acts, and I look at when the states actually joined the Union. Now, North Carolina rejected it in December 1866, where they actually passed it, or actually became a state and ratified the 14th Amendment in 1868. I'm presuming when I see these dates, this is when they became states. And so, are there any here that are in 67? Nope. Nope, nope, nope. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at Maryland, and these dates must be wrong, because Maryland and California supposedly... Okay, so just to be clear, I'm looking at these ratifications because it didn't matter when they ratified it, but apparently these states still had pressure, so technically they didn't need to ratify, right? Did the states that joined the Union today, do they need to ratify the Bill of Rights and every amendment that exists? No. In other words, I think it's tomfoolery that when, so it may be one thing that they rejected it because they didn't become a state. But once the 14th Amendment was ratified, it didn't matter whether they rejected it or not. They joined the Union, and therefore they ratified it. Because there were states that joined the Union that they never went on record, like California. And what was another one that joined in 1959? California and Maryland. And so I'm finding, how did Maryland not ratify it? Because it was a northern state. It was one of the three states that never ratified it initially, right? Or hold on here. Was Maryland? My mistake. If Maryland, yeah. So I don't see Maryland in the ratification side. And interesting. So I don't know what the play was, because I don't think Maryland had ever seceded from the Union. And so they never formally ratified it. So they weren't accounted for in the ratification numbers of the states needing to ratify it, nor were they accounted for in the southern numbers. They were just never ratified. And apparently, yeah, so apparently that was an outlier. I never realized that Maryland, I guess there may have been another outlier that I don't know, but Maryland was a northern state that didn't secede. And so because the 14th Amendment got... So when we look at the latest amendment, the 27th Amendment, actually it's technically it's the 28th, you only need 3/4 of the states. The other states don't have to. Just like the 17th Amendment, there are 6 states that never took a position whether they rejected or ratified. Utah rejected the 17th Amendment, and the other 6 states just never took a position. In other words, they never ratified it. So it doesn't matter. Once you hit that 3/4, it's done. It is constitutional, and it doesn't get undone. Unless the federal government is willing to allow you to undo your position and play the game of, you know, rescinding your position. Now, this has only happened once. That was Delaware regarding the 17th Amendment in 2010. Did you know that?
but had not.
So because of Biden coming from Delaware, and because Biden didn't like the fact that Delaware rejected the 17th Amendment and basically poked him in the eye and said, you're a progressive state. You need to actually ratify that progressive amendment. So they felt pressured. The state legislature formally rescinded their rejection and then ratified. Guess what? The federal government counted that as a ratification. If the federal government allows a state to change its position regarding the 17th Amendment, this is the only amendment that this has ever happened to. So, folks, Biden may be the most stupid idiot in the world because he opened the door to undo and rescind the 17th Amendment, not knowing what he was doing. Remember, I think in yesterday we talked about stupidity and stupid people. They just don't know. And so there's no doubt in my mind he has no idea what he did. But because the federal government and because he was in office in the presidency, they basically said, yeah, we want to be counted for this. And that means because that wasn't done with the 14th Amendment. It may have been noted at the state level, but it was never accepted to reject the 14th Amendment. Never was accepted at that point. So my point is that all we need, because we already have 7 states that never ratified, how many states do we need to reject it? We need 13. So we only need 6 states to step up and say, we want to formally reject the 17th Amendment. What happens if we get 6 states to formally reject the 17th Amendment that ratified it before?
I don't know.
You don't know. Folks, what happens is the 17th Amendment gets expunged. It goes away because the federal government opened the door to allow that to happen. And it was only because of pride of an idiot, because he didn't like the fact that his state rejected it. And he wanted the record to be corrected because he was a thug. Because he was so corrupt, he wanted to make things his way. And so he got his way. And folks, they've left that door open. And I'm here to tell you, we need to rescind the 17th Amendment and go back to allowing the state legislatures. But just because of that, and by the way, this brings up another topic. We have not had a conversation. Did you rewrite that? The suffrage for the 17th Amendment to the states.
I did.
You did rewrite that. Okay, so you're going to send that to me, and we can talk about that off the air then. Good. Awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing it. So let's move on, though, because as I'm looking at both Virginia, Carolinas, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, Texas, and Arkansas. Now, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So 3 of the states had already ratified by this point in time. 3 states, because I think there were 13, right? Let me count them up right here. There are 11. And, oh, yeah, Tennessee is not mentioned there. So, yeah, so, okay, so there were 11 rebel states. See, when you look at, there were 11 rebel states and 20 some odd non-rebel states. Come on. Why did they go to economic measures and not just amend the Constitution to end slavery?
Why? Good question.
So, okay. I mean, Lincoln should have been busy doing constitutional things before he started trying to wage warfare against an evil institution. Anyway, and I say it's evil, folks. Slavery is absolutely evil because it violates the first commandment God gave man, that thou shalt live by the sweat of thy brow. Having somebody else actually provide for you their hard labor and toil so that you don't have to work, then you're actually not living that law. And so anyway, that actually talks about welfare and all these other things. Who are the slaves today? The people who are working. because there are people who aren't working that are basically living off of our toil. Now, there are some people that cannot work for themselves. They're just never going to be able to, you know, earn to provide for themselves. And the Lord even told us there will always be those people. But we need to have the bowels of charity, you know, just open up and pour out, you know, so that these people can be taken care of. There's more than enough. As a matter of fact, I even mentioned this in my first book, that if we ended the entitlement state and we actually took away all of this unconstitutional government, I believe the good, righteous people would have enough money to actually be able to pay honest tithes and offerings and so forth to actually be able to take care of these people. Those 100%, people,
yeah.
Those people who can't. Remember, when the church takes over and they come into your home and they see you're smoking, drinking, and all these other things, they go, well, let us know when you're serious about getting help, because we can't help a person that's living in debauchery and sin. And if you're not willing to, then you need to join a church that promotes debauchery. And good luck getting charity out of them.
Yeah.
Because it's not godly. Charity is not godly for those types of people. Those type of people are self-serving. Anyway, I digress. Let's go to section two. And isn't it interesting that they didn't have a section one? Hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Be it further enacted that the commander of any district named in said act shall have power subject to the disapproval of the general of the Army of the United States, and to have effect till disapproved, whenever in the opinion of such commander the proper administration of said act shall require it, to suspend or remove from office or from the performance of official duties and the exercise of official powers any officer or person holding or exercising or professing to hold or exercise any civil or military office or duty in such district under any power, election, appointment, or authority derived from or granted by or claimed under any so-called state or the government thereof, or any municipal or other division thereof, and upon such suspension or removal such commander, subject to the disapproval of the general as aforesaid, shall have power to provide from time to time for the performance of the said duties of such officer or person so suspended or removed by the detail of some competent officer or soldier of the army or by the appointment of some other person to perform the same to fill vacancies occasioned by death, resignation, or otherwise.
Now, they didn't mention, what's the term? It's not assassination, but the term when, you know, they're executed, you know, occasioned by death. In other words,
suicided.
You know, well, no, suicide means that they've taken their own life. But when government has ended your life, you know, removed and executed, something like that. But anyway, resignation.
No, that was a joke.
Yes, it was.
Like, Hillary Clinton suicided.
Yeah, Arkansas. That's what the term is. It's called Arkansas, because Bill Clinton had, you know, that long, you know, large long list of people who committed suicide or died, right. You know, because Bill Clinton said so. You know, like the whole plane of Ron Brown, all those people that were on that plane, boom, they Arkansas'd. Anyway, yeah. All right, so. Interesting that this is strictly focused on the administration and the authority of administration and the tight control of administration. So still not seeing 40 acres and a mule. Still not seeing the bribery and coercion of creating division amongst the, you know, the different races in the South. Still not seeing that. So go ahead. I'm not that it may be in the following or in the last one, but so far we haven't seen that yet. So go ahead.
Okay. And be it further enacted that the general of the Army of the United States shall be invested with all the powers of suspension, removal, appointment, and detail granted in the preceding section to district commanders.
Okay. So he's going to be in charge of his his rank and file officers. Okay. Section 4.
Be it further enacted that the acts of the officers of the army already done in removing in said districts persons exercising the functions of civil officers and appointing others in their stead are hereby confirmed, provided that any person heretofore or hereafter appointed by any district commander to exercise the functions of any civil office may be removed either by the military officer in command of the district or by the general of the army. And it shall be the duty of such commander to remove from office, as aforesaid, all persons who are disloyal to the government of the United States or who use their official influence in any manner to hinder, delay, prevent, or obstruct the due and proper administration of this act and the acts to which it is supplementary.
Okay, so again, the administration of removing officers, civil offices, and so forth for whatever purposes. So this is all just perfunctory administration, that they're empowering the general and creating the chain of command. So let's try. Now we got 2 minutes. We have 2 minutes, and we could try to squeeze Section 5 in. But insight tells me maybe it's not best to do that. So at this point, we're in section, or this third Reconstruction Act. It's really very administrative. And so maybe you can get ahead of us and go, aha, I found a GR. It's going to be in Section 7 of that act and a couple of other sections in the fourth act. Anyway. If not, then just, we'll just ride through and read every line. But any input, any things, any questions or comments, Tammy? We got a little time. Got a minute. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm just always flabbergasted at how things went awry so quickly after they enabled everything, that they created the Constitution.
Well, so the Constitution was disabled by political compromise. The framers wanted to get rid of slavery. They knew they needed to get rid of slavery because they rallied around this thing called the Declaration of Independence. They felt that maintaining slavery became a red flag of hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And it was it was an immoral red flag at that. And so when they had to make this compromise, it was a bitter pill. And as a matter of fact, George Mason said, God cannot punish nations and states in heaven. So he will punish this nation and these states for maintaining slavery under this Constitution.
Yeah.
And he basically foretold that we would actually suffer and it would rip us apart. And that's exactly what happened. So with that, we will be back tomorrow with more. I'm sorry, today's Thursday, so we'll be back on Tuesday, and I'll be back tomorrow with my keen wit on my candidacy for 2028 as President of the United States. Stay tuned, folks. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.